Welcome to the Dead Pair Podcast, energized by KLMO Game Boy US, with your hosts, Jason Rambo and Sean Alley. Coming in hot with the 411 on all things sporting clays, your go-to source for information, education, and entertainment, from the new shooter to the seasoned competitor.
Oh, I'm a junkie, man. I want to play with the buttons.
He just likes to throw people under the bus. Right. You're not used to that yet. That's part of the show.
Does your brain hear what your mouth is saying?
Hey, I'm going to call Dave when the podcast is over and ask him what half the words are.
Let's rapid fire. Let's do the hot seat. Let's get her done.
Often imitated, but never duplicated. And now, it's showtime.
Yo, what's up, Mr. Large and in charge?
It's hot.
Yes, it's hotter than Florida on the 4th of July.
Yes, yes it is. I've been there during the 4th of July, and it's very hot.
Yes, so we recently shot the SCTP fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
Well, we got wet. It was raining on us the whole time.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
But other than that, it was a really good turnout. I think they had over 400 shooters, was that right?
Yeah, that's something weird. I'd like to ask Jake about that, because it, on WinScore, it showed 400, and then, like, for the main, it only showed, like, 300 and some, so I don't know.
I think they took the hunter class out, because, like, D class alone had, like, 120 people in it or something like that.
Yeah, it was retarded.
And then the hunter class, I think, had, like, another 100 and some in it, and but I don't think they listed the hunter class on WinScore.
Yeah, you're right. It had a separate breakout for that.
Yeah, so it must have been just for, you know, people that were out there having fun for the charity.
Non-registered shooters.
Yeah.
But so. It was a good turnout.
It was a good turnout.
Kids kicked our butts.
Well, yeah, duh. They've been shooting, all week. I mean, I hadn't touched the gun since the Indiana State shoot, and it showed. So
I mean, when there's a 90 in D class.
Right.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, kids were on fire. And you know what? They all had a good time and looked like they were all running around doing what they do.
Well, I had a short discussion with Mr. Jake Spangler of the Cardinal Center this week, and not going to release any numbers because he wants to double-check everything. He's going to get their stats to us and get back to us, but this year, you know, last year for the SCTV was record-breaking.
Mm-hmm.
This year was even bigger.
Wow.
Like to the tune of 10 or 15% more. That's big numbers. So I'm anxious to hear these numbers. And, I mean, it's up on the SCTP site, I guess, but he wants to go through everything and get us some stats. And
well, I mean, you could tell. It was jam-packed Saturday up and down the trap line, and all the vendors and stuff were full and, you know,
right.
ton of people there.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. There was a lot of people there. And they were short-staffed, and they still pulled it off. So good on them for that. There were some issues there with that. We're going to dive into that a little bit later. Jake's going to come on, and we're going to talk about some of the issues and some of the things that's going on and some of the things we need to be mindful of as shooters, as parents, you know, things we need to kind of think about a little bit.
Well, I think it just carries over to the real world, what's going on right now. I mean, restaurants, grocery stores, workplaces, everybody's short-staffed.
Yeah.
Everybody's having a hard time finding help, and it's no exception to the Sporting Clays range.
Right.
So they're doing the best they can with what they have, and with an event that size, it's probably no surprise that they don't have quite enough people, you know, and they were probably struggling to try to keep up with everything.
Well, you know, you think about the Nationals, how overwhelming and how big that was for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking more than double.
Yeah.
More than double the entrance at the SCTP.
Right.
Plus their parents. Right. They don't just go there by themselves. They go with parents.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You got like 4,000 kids and you got like 9,000 parents.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was, it was big.
It was. But, you know, it's nothing that they're not used to. They do it every year there. And I think they always do a good job. But again, I think just everybody take a deep breath and realize that, hey, things don't move as quickly or as smoothly as they once did.
Right.
And that goes for everything, going to a restaurant, going to a grocery store, going to a place of business. And we all just need to exercise a little more patience and understanding.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Sean. I think you're right. I think we need to kind of, oh boy, here comes a saying that I hate, be where our feet are, you know?
Yeah.
And understand what's going on in the world right now and just, hey, bear with everybody, you know? Everybody's doing their best that they can with what they got to work with. Before we get to, by the way, we have a huge guest tonight.
Yes, another one that we've been working very hard on to try to get on the show, and finally it's come together.
Yes, Mr. Wendell Cherry. Mm-hmm. What an honor to have him on.
Yeah, no introduction needed.
Yeah, exactly. Before we get to Wendell, I want to ask you a couple questions real quick.
Sure.
So, you know, we've been talking, I don't know, Sean, ever since you hit Masterclass, which has been 8 or 9 months ago.
Yeah, it was
right before you went to Nationals, wasn't it?
I want to say it was August, or yeah, it was around August last year.
Okay, so a year.
About a year.
Yeah, a year.
About a year.
And we've been talking about how, you know, right now is prime example. You are just buried at work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to drag you in the podcast room here to do anything. yeah. But, you know, we talk about not being able to get out and practice and shoot as much as you'd like to and then having to go compete against these guys at the top. Mm-hmm. Well, then you went down to Indiana State. And you lit it up in five stand, shot HOA.
I did.
Shot really well in FITASC. You shot really well in Super Sporting. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, in the top fives.
Yep.
So, then you go to this weekend and didn't do so well. So, have you had time to simmer on that a little bit? Have you had time to think about it? Do you still think you belong in Masterclass? Do you think that they're...
Well,
this has been debated a million times about Masterclass, AA, AAA,
again,
Pro Class.
I think if you're going to be honest with yourself... There's really two classes within Masterclass. I think mm-hmm. there are the top guys that you always see at the biggest shoots in the country. They're always right. in the top 25 or whatever. And then there's everybody else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
I mean, so name a big name. Gebbin, Corey, Anthony. Yeah,
right.
An average guy that's working a regular job is going to have a really hard time to ever come up to the level that those guys are at.
Right.
And that's what I feel. I mean, I'm a decent shot. I have good days. I have bad days. But if I go to the Nationals, I don't hold any imagination of I'm going to be up on the podium at the end of the week, no matter how much I practiced. I mean, I might be able to get really, really, really good, but the years and years and years of experience that those guys have certainly outweighs most everybody else that has to work a 9-to-5, and then they shoot on the weekend, and that's what they're doing for right. fun. But, you know, again... So in my opinion, I look at Masterclass as almost two classes. You got the guys at the very top, and then you got the guys that you're competing with locally. And I think on the local level, I can be competitive with most guys. I mean, I'm working. I'm not quite there yet. The top four or five guys in my mind that are always at the local tournaments and they're always turning the good numbers. I still have some work to do to try to catch up with them. But other than that, yeah, I feel like I'm there.
Well,
could I go back down to AA? Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, I just want to kind of push myself a little bit for a while and,
okay.
you know, and see how it works out. And if it doesn't, I'll gladly get dropped back down, but I've earned some punches this year and, hopefully keeping my average up high enough to where I don't have to get declassed back right. down.
Well, it's an interesting topic because there's friends of ours, friends of the show that have been from AA to Master and pushed back to AA and then punched back up to Master and, mm-hmm. You know, I hope she doesn't get mad at me, but Miss Maloney is a prime example. I think she's been back and forth between AA and Masters like five or six times.
Mm-hmm.
She gets punched up, and then she gets booted down, and it's frustrating.
Well, you know? Yeah, I mean, so. That's the thing. I think it's if you were only competing on local levels at your local clubs and stuff, I think it'd be easy to stay right there. But if you're mm-hmm. starting to travel to the bigger shoots, you know, the Nationals, regionals, even your state shoots, the bigger state shoots. I mean, there's going to be a level of talent there
yeah.
that's going to be above and beyond what you're typically going to see at your local club.
Right.
So
right.
that's what you got to fight against. And I have no good answer as to, you know, how you deal with that on a consistent basis and be competitive.
Right. Well, listen, I don't want to keep Mr. Cherry waiting. It's time to give him a call. So let's do that real quick. All right. We have anticipated this for a long, long time. Welcome to the show, Wendell Cherry. How are you, sir?
Hey, Jason, great to be here, and I know we've been trying to get this on the books for a long time, and so today is finally the day.
So, yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here, Wendell. Thank you, sir, for coming.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, Wendell, you know, first and foremost, the big news is you getting married, so congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's like the best thing that's ever happened to me, and she's a beautiful girl, and her family own one of the best sporting courses in the country. So it just all came together, and it's been awesome.
So now, speaking of that, that's the Big Red Oak, correct?
That's right. We're about 40 minutes southwest of the Atlanta airport.
Okay. So, yep. You know, another reason why I wanted to bring this up, Wendell, having that really solid home life or personal life, that plays a big effect on you and your shooting. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. You know, having a home life that's stable, and also, you know, I'm doing a lot of my work here, actually probably 90% of my work now here. So I'm not on the road having to travel as much. And so it's nice to be able to come home every night. And we got a great club here with tons of traps and stuff. And I can set up about anything, and I can teach about anybody here. So that's just makes life a lot easier. And it's just nice to kind of have a actual real home club.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, Wendell. And, you know, and I'm very happy for you. You know, I know you went through some tough times there, and to see you happy again is awesome. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. So congratulations.
Well, I just had a lot of bad stuff happen to me one after the other. So something good finally happened, and it just really kind of turned my life around, and a lot of good stability, and a good positive home life. And I can kind of tell in my scores. The scores are kind of coming up, and I'm competing better. So just things are on the up and up.
That's awesome.
Gotcha. Well, Wendell, I'm just going to ask a couple general questions here. First and foremost, I mean, I know you've been on quite a few other podcasts, and most of our listeners may have heard you there, but I just want to ask a few basic questions. So first and foremost, I mean, as a person that's been in the game for a while, I mean, obviously you've come from the day and age when we used to have, you know, manual traps and trappers all the way up to now we've got high tech, you know, yep, wireless remotes with, you know, all kinds of crazy options on these throwers. Yep. But as you've progressed through all the years, do you still enjoy shooting clays? Like, if you weren't doing it for a competition, would you still go out in the field with, like, say, your buddies on a weekend and go bust birds, or is that something that you just really don't look into anymore?
You know, I absolutely still love it. And I think to rise to an elite level, it has to be something that you love, and it has to be a passion. Even on my days off, I go shoot. Okay. And stuff. So I'm on a range just about every day. And so I'll typically teach all day. And then just before dark, I'll shoot practice. And then even on my days off, I'm still probably out on the range shooting and stuff. So, it's my, identity. It's what I love. Absolutely. I still enjoy it today, just as much as I did when I actually first started. And, you know, I think one thing that keeps me in the game is it kind of feels like I've just started, even after almost 30 years of sporting, and I started shooting when I was 8. And I still feel like I'm a kind of a brand new shooter all the time. And I'm thankful for that, because that kind of keeps, you know, your drive up and stuff. So I don't think I can burn out on it.
Okay.
And stuff. So, I very much love the game and all the people in it who actually, a lot of my clients have actually become my very best friends, and they're almost like family to me. And then, you know, you're engaged in their journey as well. And while we're talking about that, Ashley Little just won the World Feed Task, and that's my school's 37th world title.
Wow, that's incredible.
And I'm very proud of that. And Matt Madison Sharp, I think, was second, and I also coached her. All my boys did good there, and I haven't actually checked all the scores yet. I just got a call actually before it was official that Ashley had won and stuff. So, and the story behind that is she flew up here, I don't know how many days ago, 7 or 8 days ago. And of course, she has a job, a very successful job, a company that she's building. So she left Miami on a flight to Atlanta, and she gets here about 10 o'clock in the day. We shoot about 4 hours. She jumps back on the afternoon flight, flies home, flies to Italy, and wins.
Wow, that's awesome.
And so I'm just very happy for her. She's been so close so many times. And then when she finally wins one, it's the very biggest one. And I was just very happy with that. Also, Matt Madison Sharp has had a great year this year. She just won the U.S. Open and stuff. But that's my 37th world title that my school can claim, and just very, very proud of that, and very, very proud of their success and all their hard work, and they just make me look a lot better than I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fantastic, man. That's a heck of an accomplishment, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, that shows how good you are, because I got that right here in a list of questions for you for this about Ashley. So we're going to dive into that here in a minute.
Sure.
But, you know, most recently we had the U.S. Open, and I got to looking at some statistics. There's been a lot of people that have won the U.S. Open, but that national championship kind of eluded them. And then that goes in reverse. There's been a lot of people that have won the national championship, but that U.S. Open's kind of eluded them. With you being so successful at the Open and then coming up short a couple times on the national championship, why do you think that is? What seems to be the major difference between those two shoots?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, the Open travels. And I've won the Open three times. I've been second at the Nationals five times, three times by one bird. And so I've been second at San Antonio five times, which is actually the Brock bridesmaid a lot. So I've been so close so many times. I think the Open travels to a different venue. I also think that the U.S. Open targets are harder than the national championship. I think the national championship is a shoot that's vetted more carefully to ensure that 2,000 shooters have a good time, and maybe the Open is a little tougher. I also think that a four-day format, which I absolutely love, actually my favorite tournament is San Antonio, and I love the grind of a four-day main and stuff. So you know, it's just like Pete Sampras never won the French Open, and like he won everything else. That's the one that I haven't won yet. I've won four national FITAS titles, three U.S. Opens and stuff, but the ball hasn't dropped for me in San Antonio yet. But you know, we just keep training and keep trying, and been so close so many times. But I do think the targets are a little softer. I think the target speeds are slower. Leads are shorter. It kind of lets a lot of different styles be competitive. When the targets get faster, leads get bigger, time frames are more compressed. I think the better technicians come to the forefront. And so I think that's part of it. And so, you know, I think that's it. But I do think a four-day main is a little bit tougher, because – You've got to put 4 days in, and the Open, you only got to put three in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the Open targets are typically tougher.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I having said that, I don't really know if there's any correlation between the two. You know, if you win an Open, then your confidence is, hey, that's my favorite shoot, and I can win the Open. So you do more. And so, but, that's about, you know, the main changes between those, two shoots. But other than that, I don't really know. It's, but they're kind of similar, other than the 4 day main, is a grind, and I absolutely love it. You know, also for the Open, it's 3 days. And so it's almost at that same spot. But, you know, and other than that, I don't know if there's any correlation between the two, why some shooters win one and not the other. I think for me, I've always wanted to win the shoot in San Antonio, maybe too bad. You know, and so you. So you want everything else, and so you go in there and you just maybe try too hard, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think the last time I was runner-up may have been 2018, and I remember coming down the stretch, and it was a soft little going-away bird, probably the easiest shot of the whole match. I shoot just in front of it, I thought, oh, boy, that's going to cost. And Don Brunt from Clay Shooting was following me with cameras and all that. And then I run the course out from there, and I run the last station, and I turn around, and he said, what do you think? I said, I'm a target light. And sure enough, I was. Wow. And you know, it's amazing to me that we can go shoot 300 targets over that many stations over 4 days, and it comes down to one shot.
That's incredible. Just amazing.
It is.
Well, I definitely commend you for your never say die attitude, because I tell you what, if I would have came that close that many times, I'd been so disheartened by now. I'd probably take up fishing or something.
Oh no, that I think that just puts you your drive in overdrive.
And fire, you know, burning, maybe.
Yeah, and you know sometimes not having the championship actually it gives you something to continue for and something to do. You know, the harder it is to get, the more I want it. And I'm just as hungry today as I was the day I started. And as a matter of fact, I spent most of the day-to-day training. So
that's awesome. So,
yeah.
That's good. Well, Wendell, I want to kind of dip back here. I mean, we were talking about, obviously, your level of experience, the years you've had in this sport. With all the changes, again, going from hand-thrown traps to mechanical traps, electronic traps, have you had to change any of your shooting styles or techniques to match the times that have come up now?
Yeah, you know, I just set a prelim at Georgia State that my club held here. And, you know, we were running right at 600 shooters for that shoot. And I think what shooters don't really realize is, yeah, it's target quality that we're after, but the time is so critical now. And I know on the prelim, I set one station that had 3 pair going into a station that had 4 pair, and I backed up 3 squads there. And so Matt Reese told me on a course up there close to the clubhouse at M&M, he said, if I throw a long report pair on station, whatever that is, I think it was maybe 12. He said, my last squad goes out 35 minutes late.
Wow.
And so what that is the crowds are so much bigger now. And so we got to move people through more. So you're going to shoot more and more compressed time frames than ever before. And so that's going to be more true pairs, more fast shots, targets that doesn't have as long a flight time, and all of that really adds up and is absolutely in the forefront of the target setter's mind, just to make sure that each crank is on time. So since the time frames are more compressed, I used to teach a little bit lower gun all the time, and so your draw length would actually match the time frame of the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't teach pre-mounted, but it's a much shorter draw all the time because most of the shots and time frames that we shoot in is much faster.
Mm. So maybe a little bit like what Anthony calls a soft mount, where it's just not a full dismount like a FITAS mount, but it's closer to you.
Right, right. So the gun is high, but it's not on the shoulder. So it's just kind of a more short draw. So you're closer to the shoulder, and what that does, that just matches up to the time frame of the shot. I think I'm doing that a lot more than ever before, just because of the time frames of the shot. They're just faster.
Yeah.
So that's probably the only major change. What's happening at the barrel with the target has always kind of stayed the same for me and stuff. But it's the back of the gun that's probably changed more than anything there, again, just because the time frames are shorter.
Gotcha. Well, Wendell, okay, so speaking of time, and everybody's in a time crunch and trying to speed things up, you know, there's always been a lot of talk about the amount of time a shooter spends in the box for your, you know, your pre-shot and everything like that. And most people know that guys like you and Tom and David spend a little more time in the box than most. So what are your thoughts about people talking about maybe trying to impose like a time restriction on a shooter once they get in the box?
You know, if they want to change that rule, then we'll just abide by it. But by and large, I don't really see many shooters, if any, taking too long except me and David. And you know, if you put me, David, and Tom on the same squad, we can actually shoot a tournament down. And actually this year we've been shooting quite a bit on the same squad. But you know the truth is, we are slower for sure. And that all started with me in a program. I remember when I first started teaching a program, all my peers would call me Mental Cherry. And so I took a lot of heat for all of that and stuff. And now they're all doing it. So, but probably my average call for a target is probably about 15 seconds.
Okay. That's not so bad, no.
Yeah. And so it's not terribly long. I think David is faster than he's ever been as that. So I really don't see a issue with the time frame. And by and large, I don't ever see anybody be slow but us and stuff. So I really don't see any slow shooters that, you know, that I personally see. So I sure don't think there's a problem or a need of a rule change or something like that. So,
okay, yeah.
So I don't really think that's an issue.
Okay.
So we're going to dive a little deep here. So stay with me here, Wendell.
Okay.
All right. Griffin Howe, he's one of your rising stars. He's one of your, your students.
Yep.
His shooting style mirrors you. I mean, you, Tom, and Griffin.
Yep.
David used to be the exact same way, but he's kind of found a little bit of his own style. And it seems like, you know, he's still using your base fundamentals, but he's kind of, he's kind of trying to find his own way. What do you think of his concept?
You know, I the last tournament I was in, I shot with, on his squad and he shot his butt off. He shot super good. I really don't see any change in anything he's doing than what he's always done, except he's just shooting really fast.
Okay.
And so the move is a little bit shorter because he's pulling the trigger sooner. You know, and I teach some speed drills and stuff like that, you know, just to build eye speed and shot speed and kind of build your trust threshold and all of that. And I think he'd done that so much that that became his base stroke. But do I really think it's different? I really wouldn't know how it's different. I mean, we're essentially doing exactly the same thing other than, he's just shooting really, really fast. And if he'd slow down, he'd probably win more.
Are you listening out there, David?
So with that being said, Wendell, do you think it's okay for a student to take what they have learned from your program and then apply it to their own program and kind of find their own way, or do you feel what you have is tried and true and, you know, they should probably stick with that?
Well, you know, it's like Joe Finizi. I've coached Joe since he was 9 years old. But if you look at Joe's shoot, you wouldn't really know he was one of my students. So he's kind of put his own spin to it and stuff. So I think if it's better, sure. But, you know, now that we have 37 world titles, I don't really know how it would be better. And the truth is, you know, we all are not going to move exactly the same. Our bodies are not the same. And so I don't think we're clones of each other. We're all going to do things a little bit our own way. Right.
Yeah.
There's just certain fundamentals that have to be implemented for it to be good. As long as those are being executed well, sure. If it's better, then do it. Yeah. But you know, I mean, we've produced a lot of champions the years and stuff. So I'm very confident in what I teach and how I train people. And if there was really something that needs to be changed, I really wouldn't know what that would be. And that kind of sounds arrogant on my part, but that's just kind of the way I see it. But if it's like Matt Madison Sharp, I trained her. She's shooting kind of mounted with the head up now, and obviously her game is better because of it and stuff. So I don't really say anything about that and stuff. So if she's performing better, then that's what she should do, right?
Yeah.
And stuff. So and here's the other thing too. You know, the shooter you are this year is not the shooter you're going to be next year and so on. So you're evolving the whole time. So your issues and your needs change as you evolve.
Absolutely. And don't think that it's arrogance, Wendell. I mean, you got 37 world titles to back your program. So you have a right to claim that.
Yeah, you're not the typical armchair quarterback, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Wendell, okay, so in regards to your coaching, I know you've always been a big advocate for controlling your eyes. And guys like you and Tom and David have amazing eyesight. I have pretty good eyesight, but how do you help a shooter, like, for instance, Jason, who has a really hard time with his vision for whatever reason? Is there certain things that you do special for people that have poor eyesight or struggle with their vision?
Well, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of issues on how people see. And that's a really kind of a complicated deal there. But the first thing is, if your move's not correct, your eyes are not going to stay on the target. So acuity doesn't actually matter.
Okay.
Right.
And so there's certain moves that's going to induce a check barrel. So it's going to make your eyes pull off the bird. And it's not every time, but it's too often. And there's a lot of top shooters that say they see the bird, but the truth is it's a lower percentage than they say. And so not all moves and not all techniques are equal. So I'll kind of sum it up like this. The way you move controls where you look, by and large.
Okay.
Okay.
And so if your move is not optimal and efficient, you're never really going to see in the high 90 percentile, when you go out, it's just not, humanly possible. There's a lot of guys that shoot is actually a number two dominance, which I think a lot of coaches miss. And so that means that that doesn't mean that they crossfire. It means that if they're in the gun for any length of time, their wiring doesn't tolerate it. And so their eyes go into the lead.
Yeah.
And so those guys have to shoot a certain way. And, most people that are, a number two dominance really don't even know that they are. They just know that their eyes keep flying off the target.
And see, that's what David found with me, because I thought I was 100% right eye dominant. And then David had me do a test and I'm actually R2 L2.
Yeah.
So I've had to approach the target in a totally different manner. If not, Sean can vouch for me. When I flinch, it looks like somebody shocked me with a 220 cord.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a visual flinch.
Yeah. So if you're a number two dominance, if you're in the gun long enough to swing through or pull away, you've been there too long and your eyes are going to come off way too often. And so for those guys, they have to pull the trigger the moment the stock touches.
Yes. Yes.
If you don't, and you don't crossfire, it's just that the eyes come off the target.
Yep.
Right. And stuff. So there's lots of other, issues that way. And the truth is most people never really learn how to use their eyes properly. And I would say that's true for a lot of shooters. And I hear all kinds of stuff, and I don't think most people really understand how to use their eyes effectively to try to get the most out of their vision. And it's not really about being 20/10 acuity. It's about just keeping them on.
Yeah.
The shot. And so if your mechanics are not right, it doesn't matter how much you practice, they're still not going to stay on.
Mm, yeah.
That's well said.
So those fundamentals have to be in place for you to really master your eye work. And I really don't think most coaches really, are savvy to that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's one of the things that we don't hear enough about. I mean, you know, I know that yourself and Dr. Kolo have spent a lot of time with it, but when it comes to instruction, it seems like we go out to the course and we're going to work on this or that, but the eyes are not something, you know, how you've talked about that before. You know, I heard you say on a podcast previously, you want to know what the student is seeing. Okay. You're not interested in the movement of the gun. You want to know what the student is seeing. And that's something that I think a lot of instruction's missing. Would you say?
Right. Yeah. You've got to really be almost an empathic to be able to pick up on that stuff. And so there's a lot of things that control how we see. There's just lots of things that control that. And so unless those are in place, you're just not going to see the best you could. And it's not all about having great acuity. It's just a matter of moving correctly, controlling the mind and the body correctly so the eyes stay on.
Right. Hey, Wendell, I know something I want to bring up on the podcast here. You and I had a great conversation down at the Jacklings Cup back in February.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were talking about the front hand versus the back hand having control in the mount. That was a great conversation. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners about, you know, the back hand versus the front hand and control of the mount?
Well, you know, I think everybody is really all about the barrel end of the gun, but the true tempo in a mount actually is coming from the back of the gun. And so the front of the gun, the back, and the hill of the stock and the target all have to travel at the same speed.
Right.
And so if that's not there, again, you won't see the target often enough to matter. Okay. And so I just think a lot of people are all about what the barrel's doing. And of course that is a very important part of it, but that's not the whole story. And so being in tempo, being in flow and a one speed continuum is paramount, for you to be able to actually execute the shot correctly.
Right.
And stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of things I say in my clinic that goes against 130 years of shotgun teaching. There's just a lot of things that I teach that goes against what most people think is correct. And, you know, and I'll tell you how that starts. You know, a lot of things that we use, the old cliche sayings and the wives' tales that hang around the gun clubs that our dads heard, we've heard, and it's just passed down, and we accept them as being truthful, or we accept them as being the truth. So many of them is not, and a lot of it doesn't really have a place in modern shotgunning. And I think what we do here is the cutting edge of modern shooting. And I think a lot of stuff that's being taught and still used is pretty antiquated. I think it's pretty dated. And it's just because so many people just accept just a lot of the old cliches. It's like one would be follow through. The shot charge leaves your barrel in 2,600ths of a second. That's way inside our reflex time. And so essentially there is no such thing as a follow through. If you do the math on that, your hands would have to move over 800 miles an hour. any effect on that. So the next time you go out to shoot, try a big exaggerated follow through and pay attention to how far your eyes are out in front of the target. They'll be 30 feet out in front.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so there's just a lot of old wives' tales that we've always heard that doesn't hold a lot of water. But, you know, you got to remember we used to bloodlet to heal people too. So,
yeah. Right, yeah. Put leeches on people too.
I think that has a lot to do with your answer to Sean's question on the evolution of the game, you know, and it seems like you've kind of evolved your coaching and your instruction around the modern times. And
I think, I think more importantly than anything I've ever won, I'm in the Hall of Fame and I've had a great career and all that stuff. And I'm very proud of that. And I want to continue that. And I'm still on that path. But I think my biggest contribution is I do think that we evolved the game technically and kind of come up with our own technique. And I don't know when somebody's actually come up with something brand new to do. And, you know, it's always been swing through, pull away, that type of stuff. And I think we just really elevated the game. And there's so many young people I see when I go out on the course and they don't even know who I am or anything like that. But I see me everywhere. I see a lot of stuff that I've taught for almost 30 years now. And I see that more than ever. And 15 years ago, you didn't see it except just a few people. Now you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And they don't really know where that comes from. But I see that work take hold everywhere. And, you know, but at the same time, too, coaching is not just about technique. There's a lot more to coaching than just the technical side of it. Now, I'm a I love technique. That's why I shoot. And I thrive on that. And that's, you know, that's always, something that I take a lot of pride in and something that I love to teach and watch. But so much of it is building the shooter's mind, at the same time that you're building great technique. And I think that's why only a few guys actually produce champions. And, because I mean, you can build the hands, but if you don't have the heart and the mind, you still don't win.
Yeah, I agree. Gotcha.
And so a good coach is going to build both at the same time.
Gotcha. Well, hey, Wendell, speaking of coaching, so what's your thoughts about a coach shooting with their students, whether it be during practice or at a tournament? Do you have like an opinion on that?
You know, I typically don't think it's a good thing.
Okay.
I don't think it's good for the coach because you'll be coaching instead of shooting, even though you may not say a word to him, but you're watching. I think the student feels a lot of pressure for the coach watching. So he's a little bit distracted. I think you have to remember, you know, for me to shoot at the speed that I do, or somebody else shooting at that speed, it took me 15 years to get that fast. So this guy's been shooting a year. Now he's trying to do something that he's not ready to do. And so I'm not always, I don't always think that's a good thing. Most of the time when it's happened with me, didn't turn out that good.
Okay.
And so, it's turned out bad more than good. I'll say that. And so I think your head's just cleaner. Your concentration's better when you're out there on your own and you're staying in your bubble without all that. And most of the time when you're shooting, if you really want to help somebody, stay quiet.
Gotcha.
Right.
Well, and along those same lines, so let's talk about when you're in the box and distractions, because I know, you know, you've got a musical past, you've learned to play in a band, all kinds of loud stuff. My dad right. played, my brother played. So you've kind of learned to block out or focus on sure. certain things and stay in the moment. So yeah. when you have a student that's struggling with staying focused in the box, whether it's a, you know, golf buggy running by or somebody talking in the back of the station, how do you yep. advise them to try to stay in the moment, stay focused and focus on what they're trying to get done in the box?
You know, when I actually teach the shot prep, pre-shot, shot and post shot, it's really kind of a practice thought loop. So you just stay in this loop no matter what. I think most of the time when shooters lose focus is because, it's lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. They're scared a little bit. Game's falling apart. And typically it's when the mind is projecting a loss or they've missed a target. And, a good shooter is going to stay in his practice thought loop, regardless of the result of the shot before it.
Okay. Yeah. Right? I get that. Yeah.
And that's not to say that, you know, we've all been in a box and somebody comes roaring up on a TV and drives up your butt. And can you ignore that? Probably not, but you can stop and reset, you know?
Okay.
Most of the time, loss of focus is just a loss of confidence, and that's stemming from projecting, failure or, mm. And those are things that you have to address and kind of cultivate and stuff while you're training them. And if they've been well trained, they'll be able to handle that pretty good.
Okay.
Although at the same time, having said that, I remember one time we were in the Czech Republic shooting and George Digweed was shooting there, and there was a photographer following him around. And this guy had just gotten back from, Iraq, I think. And he was taking, pictures over there, and he got up under George's skin, and George could not tune him out. And he's got a very strong mind, and he could not tune him out, and it beat George. Mm. So if the greatest shooter of all time can succumb to it, I guess we all can. But if you're in a strong state, you don't hear that golf cart quite as loud. So I think a lot of it is just how your game's going and where you are at the time. But as you build technique, you want to build confidence, and you want to build those contingency plans to be able to deal with all that stuff. And I always tell, like, if I'm teaching somebody and somebody's driving up on us, I tell them to call. I said, every time that happens, I want you to call pull and see if you can focus while that's happening. And so don't run away from it. I said, I want you to run to it.
Okay. Tackle it head on, basically.
So, and so anytime, you know, somebody's driving up on you, somebody's talking, or whatever that distraction is, that's when I want you to call pull the most.
Okay.
And so I think as soon as you do that, I think that the distraction loses a lot of its power then. And so that's one good little thing to do instead of saying, oh no, I got to have it quiet here before I can call pull. In your practice, every time that happens, that's when I want you to jump in the box just to see if you can pull through that. And after you do, then it doesn't have quite the power on you when that actually happens for real.
That's well said. And yeah. that's probably good advice for everybody to listen to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he, circling back to Ashley Little.
Yep.
You had her switch from right hand to left hand.
I did not. John Woolley did that.
Oh, and, okay.
yeah. And so he did, and she went through a bunch of different stocks. And John's very good at that. He's better at that than I am. And so he went through when I think about Ashley, and she shot her way onto Team USA right-handed, left eye dominant, scrapped the whole thing. Now she's in the top four female shooters in the country, which is probably the world, because I think we are the best in the world now, and I think we've been the best in the world for a long time. So she scraps all of that. That takes a tremendous amount of confidence to say, I'm on Team USA, I'm top four in the world, and I'm going to relearn everything I know.
That's incredible.
That'd be a heck of an undertaking, that's for
that,
sure.
That, my hat's off to you. And John is a better fitter than I am, and so he started with the stocks and stuff and got her tuned in. And then I took care of the stroke, but that's actually, I would have to credit John with that, because he's the one that made all that happen and swapping her shoulder. And he told her, said, if you want to win the world championship, you're going to have to shoot off the other shoulder.
Wow.
And boom, it happened. And, wow. And stuff. So, but I'm the mechanic and he did the fitting.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. I thought it was you that had her switch. Okay.
No, see, John's in her area down there, and I'm only there January and February, and that's a huge undertaking. That's and so I've always kind of had a lot of respect for somebody who would throw away already a very competitive game at an elite place and start completely over again.
So, can you walk us through a little bit of that journey, Wendell, that you had to take her through transitioning from right shoulder to left shoulder? I mean, obviously the eye dominance was the reason why, but
once she actually got her stock fit and everything, it was almost instantly better. It was a lot in stance and posture and things like that. So it wasn't actually a downturn. As soon as she could use both eyes and the guns on the right side of the body or the correct side of the body, it was almost better right off the bat.
Wow.
And stuff. The hard part was, I think it took three stocks over the period of about 2 years.
Wow.
And so a lot of gun fitting, a lot of that stuff going on.
That's a lot of work for the shooter, you know.
That's a lot of work. Not many people I know would actually have done that.
Yeah, hats off to that girl.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I'm so excited to see her win a couple of days ago I kind of know what has all been involved in that process, and to see success come, I was very excited and very happy for it.
Gotcha. Well, Wendell, with all your coaching, I know things are changing for you. Are you still primarily based in Tennessee, or are you starting to basically call Big Red Oak your new place?
Big Red Oak is my home club now. It's my home base. Mm-hmm. I'm doing probably 90% of my work there. I go to Chicago a couple of times a year up there to coach. I'm in Florida January and February, and Scottsville, close to my Tennessee house, Scottsville, Kentucky. I coach there some. But primarily, it's all here. And our club is getting better and better. I've got 30 new traps coming at the end of this month. So we'll have 3 big courses up and a 17 trap PTAS layout, sub gauge courses. I think our club is very nice. It's beautiful. And we're 3,477 acres.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, that's a big old place.
Yeah. And so we just held Georgia State. And I thought we did a really good job of that. We got the Southeast Regional year coming up. And we're also holding the AFS National Championship in September.
I'll see you down there, Wendell.
Yeah. And stuff. And so I'm a little bit more involved with the club, setting some targets here and there. And then we got a great crew too at the club. Mike Bashaw and his wife, they're our main team, and they do a great job. And it's an awesome club. If you hadn't come to that, you should come, because I would put it, right at the top of the food chain. I don't know many places any better than that. So if you haven't been to Big Hick Red Oak, you should come by. And while in the area, you got Cherokee Rose. That's a nice club, not far away. You have the Meadows, and that's not very far away. So it's kind of a shooting mecca here. There's lots of really good clubs around here, and you're not very far from the airport and stuff. So if you're out driving trying to find a place to shoot, you need to drive this way.
Yeah, I actually qualified for the AFS Invitational, so I'll see you down there in September for sure.
Cool. Well, I'm going to set some real hard targets just for you.
There you go.
Gee, thanks, Wendell. Hey, speaking of that, Wendell.
But they're not going to be like the U.S. Open.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. Hey, speaking of that, AFS, what have you shot it? What's your thoughts? Do you like it? Do you love it?
I shot it at the U.S. Open, and I won that there, and that's the first time I've ever shot it.
So now you're a big fan of it.
I am, yeah. Anytime you win, you like it a lot.
Yeah, you're right.
There's parts of it that I really like, and I really need to experience it more to before I really have any comment on it, but I think it's a good thing. You know, the NSCA has now sanctioned it, so you take punches and points on all of that. So, but no, I think it's a great game. It's quicker. It allows the guys who are I think it's up to A class. I think you can actually shoot on the shoulder if you want.
Yes, correct.
Stuff. And so, Cutter does away with a bunch of the rules that maybe makes PTAS not quite as much fun. And so I think it's a great game. And two, it's a national title. So any national title is a good deal. So,
yeah.
So I hope everybody comes out in September to do that. And by then everything will be kind of cooled down and stuff. So that'd be a nice time of the year to be out.
Well, Wendell, I'm going to put you on the spot here. So if you were forced to choose between sporting and PTAS, and you could only shoot one for the rest of your life, what would you choose and why?
Sporting.
Okay.
I would shoot sporting mainly because, and, you know, it's weird. I won 4 national titles at PTAS and a lot of other accolades, and I've almost got as many PTAS accolades as I do sporting. But I guess the reason why I say that is I like the art of having to repeat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being able to repeat is harder, certainly psychologically harder, probably technically harder too. I think a lot of guys think PTAS is harder, and you do have to have a good mount, and you got to have some high trust to be able to pull the trigger when the gun finally hits the shoulder and all that. You don't have much time to do it. But I actually think sporting clays is maybe a bit harder, psychologically for sure. And I guess the main reason why I say that is, as a pro shooter, I can win a lot more money at sporting, and it's just more available, and so I can go somewhere anytime and go to a sporting match. Not true with the PTAS, but But I actually love both. But if I had to pick one or the other, I would actually pick Sporting.
Well, maybe that's why David and his ADHD, he's better off at FeeTask.
If David had to do his ABCs, it would like B R Z.
Well, you know, I've told everybody in our small circle, and I'll just let it out on the podcast. You know, I heard you say that the third pair is the most dangerous pair.
And, yep, that's what the conscious mind chatters.
And you just advocated for it right there in your comments about Sporting. I think you're exactly right. I mean, you know, FeeTask, you never shoot the same pair twice, ever.
No, that's right. And you don't have to repeat. And then keeping up with the menu, having to read that keeps the conscious mind occupied.
Yes.
So psychologically, it's much easier.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a good point. How about anything new? Like, have you tried Helis yet? Or what do you think about that end of
it? Say that again now.
Helis, have you shot the Helis yet, the plastic?
Yeah, I haven't shot it lately, but I shot it years ago. I used to shoot it quite a bit in Texas. And things like that, but I haven't shot it in a long time. But that's a fun game to shoot. I just don't shoot it much. It's not around a lot. And stuff. So, and I actually, you know, for me, I it's a little bit sloppy shooting because the target's so unknown. So the move, I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of just kind of slinging and, at something. And so I probably don't enjoy it as much because of that. I actually like the refinement of a known line so I can set up and I can make a perfect move to that. In Helis, you don't know what box is coming out of, so the move could get pretty wild and kind of feels kind of sloppy to me a little bit.
Okay.
And I probably don't enjoy that quite as much.
Gotcha. That's fair. That's
so
fair.
So you're more of a calculated shooter, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and which is kind of weird because I started shooting a shotgun because of hunting, so it's very instinctual, and they don't show you a show duck before you kill it.
Show duck.
And stuff. But when it comes to the art of shooting a shotgun, I like it to be very refined, very repeatable at a very high level. So in the same thing shooting box birds, it's kind of sloppy and I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of that. So
Wendell, this is a tough question. I know you're very opinionated about this one and I'd love to hear your opinion. What are your thoughts on a veteran shooter like yourself that's accumulated enough points and then being able to choose whether you are on the veteran or open team for Team USA? Is that even an option? I don't even know how the rules work.
Actually not an option. And I was actually on both teams and I didn't take the position. I think I've qualified for Team USA or United Shooting Team 30 times.
Okay. Wow, that's impressive.
I don't think in terms of being a vet, I really don't. And I talked to Glenn Mosley a lot about it. I said, please don't put me over there. I begged them not to put me in vets. I don't want a handicap. I don't even check the scores in that. I don't think that way. And I'm still very much an open competitor. My scores are still there. That scares me to death to even think that way. And I don't think that way.
So do you think that if you've earned enough points for either, that you should be able to choose whether you get to shoot on the open or the veteran team?
Well, yes and no. And I'll tell you the no part. Really, when you're on Team USA, the goal is to bring back the gold in every division.
Right.
So if I could help the vets more than the open, then if I'm doing the right thing for the team, all right, then I should shoot in that concurrent.
Okay.
Right. Because I'm helping the country more by being there than in the open. Right.
Right.
And stuff. So I see it that way, but from my own personal view of it. I think if you can shoot the number, why not? And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we all make a lot of hubbub about a young shooter coming up, or, you know, a 15-year-old wins the U.S. Open and stuff. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's a lot bigger news when a guy that's 62 or however somebody would be to win a major shoot. That's a way bigger story that never gets told.
I agree 100%.
And that's a bigger accomplishment, not to take anything away from anybody, but to see a guy, it's like Stuart Clark. I remember him, 62, from England. Stuart's from England, and he was one of my coaches early on. And he won the World Sporting, I want to say at E.J. Churchill's, maybe where we were at. He was 62 years old, and not a word wrote about it.
Wow. Yeah, and he should have got some more accolades for that one.
Yes, and stuff. So that's kind of a story that's never covered, and we only cover if a 15-year-old wins, and I just think that's a great feat as somebody that age to be still competitive and be able to pull those things off at that age. That should at least make a story.
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. Absolutely.
If you remember, I think it was the British Open. Tom Watson was 62, and he tied to win the British Open at St. Andrews, and he lost the playoff, but not by shot. I actually, whoever the young guy was that beat him actually hold the chip shot out. And stuff. And so he lost. But that was a great story for somebody 62 years old that had beat the entire field of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Well, speaking about shooting overseas, Wendell, it's not often that we see you shooting overseas. Is that just a matter of particular preference or matter of schedule or?
Yeah. Schedule, workload, all of that. And I've shot overseas a lot, actually. And I've shot in England a lot, France, Czech Republic, Italy, and those places. And this coming year, I'll go. Actually, the only reason why I didn't go this year is my staff had to leave. I think they had a wedding, and then we also had some COVID there, and so my wife and I just had to run the whole place. So it was either shut it down or stay. Yeah. And so we were actually signed up to go. We had our plane tickets and our rooms and gun permits and all that stuff, and then we ended up not being able to go. But I haven't been. So Ann passed away 6 years ago, and I haven't been overseas in 6 years. But I used to shoot a lot there, once that happened, I just didn't go. And my father passed away in September, so my mom kind of by herself. So, you know, you have other things that, you know, you have to take care of your family and things like that. So big trips like that and far from home and all that, it kind of makes that harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally understandable. Totally understandable. Yep.
So Wendell, I know you don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but we do this thing. We do this thing on here called Rapid Fire, and we're going to ask you some questions about your gear, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. So first of all, let's start with the gun. Your make and model.
Yep. My make is a Parassi 34-inch MX-2000 fixed choked Almod and full.
Okay. Is that a custom stock or a factory stock?
That stock is when I first signed on with them, I almost lost my deal with them in 1999. I went to a fitter. I'm not going to throw this name out. And I thought, man, I've got this deal. I want this gun to be right. So I went to a fitter, and he drew me up a prescription. They built it like the prescription, and it came back. And that thing would hit me in the teeth like I was in a boxing match with Mike Tyson.
And, ooh, wow.
And I couldn't shoot it. And I actually started shooting the auto because I just couldn't shoot it. So I was at Gamea Shooting Supply one day. And he was selling P guns back then. And there was a box there that said not for sale on it. And I opened up this box, and there's a piece of wood there that looks like orange crate wood. And it was just an old spare throwaway stock that they had sent for some reason with the guns that he had ordered. And it said not for sale on it. And that's how ugly it was. But I went, I picked it up, and the stock had no pad. And I said, Jeff, how much you want for this? And he said, whoa, he said, like, you can just have that. So I took it home. I put it on a grinder, stuck a pad on it, been shooting it ever since.
Are you serious? Wow.
And so that's the extent of my fitting. Now, I've had a lot of fitters build me stocks from just about everybody, and that's the only stock I shoot. I've been shooting it since about 22, 23 years. I've shot it so much that my face is worn to the polyurethane finish on it. And it's worn out. And but it's about the only piece of wood I'll shoot.
Wow, that's incredible.
I've never been fitted. It's just something I found in a box and I stuck a pad on it and been shooting it ever since.
That's incredible. So I know you said you're 34-inch fixed choke. What is your constriction or your constriction?
I'm odd and full. So it's a 26 in the bottom and 32 on the top.
Wow, that's tight. What shells are you shooting? What recipe?
I shoot a Remington. The 1300 ounce and an eighth, 7.5 only.
So you're still an ounce and an eighth shooter.
Oh yeah,
That's what all the cool kids did.
Whammy shells.
I thought you said a while back you were going to back off to a 1 ounce shell, but you're still ounce and eighth.
Well, I was probably drinking then or something. But it's like my daddy told me, a good big one beats a good little one every time.
There you go.
And stuff. So, but that's not a load for a lot of people, but I love that load. I've been shooting that load. Well, I shot for 18 or 19 years, then Freedom Group come in there and kind of screwed the whole company up. And so I was there 18 or 19 years. Then they let all of us go, and I shot Winchester for 2 or 3 years, and now I'm hired back, and I'm so glad to be back. I forgot how much I liked it, and this is the best group of people that I've ever worked with, and I love the cartridge. It's the cartridge I shot to the Hall of Fame. I just don't think there's anything any better, and especially at long range. It's just a great, great cartridge. And it's absolutely my favorite. I actually shot that round my entire career, except for a couple of years. Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay. So, I know you're in a vest. What kind of vest you got?
Castellani. My glasses are Pila and I actually just signed on with them not too long ago and absolutely love them. I wish I'd kind of done that earlier. And I just see the target so much better in them.
And what about your ear protection, Wendell? What are you using for that?
Just foamings.
Just foamings?
Yeah.
Well, we need to introduce you to Dr. Grace. We need to get you a set of Otopros.
Man, I tell you what, I'm so deaf, I don't think it makes any difference.
Well, she's got these new ones that she came out with that kind of look like a triangle. I know you know what I'm talking about, the traditional earplugs that have like the three different sizes of little foam deals.
Like baffles. Yeah. They're kind of like baffles.
Yeah. It's got a filter in it, so you and I could stand and have a conversation behind the box almost whispering. But when that gun goes off, it silences it.
Right.
They're only $50.
Wow.
Yeah. If you're interested in that, we'll talk after the show here. I'll get you a set. I'll talk to Dr. Grace. I'll get you a set.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, Wendell, I'm sure by now in this conversation, the people listening are they're really enticed. They want to have a lesson with you. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, you can actually go on my website, and that's Wendell at WendellCherry.com, or you can call 931-529-1802. And that's my cell phone number. Judy Morris also does the number on the site. That's her phone number. She ran Team USA for many years, did an outstanding job with that. Also, she ran the PSCA. So when you actually talk to her, she understands the game. She's been around a long time and stuff. So, those two ways, or if you can't remember any of that, call Big Red Oak Plantation.
Okay. There you go. Yeah.
And what about like time frames, Wendell? Like, are you basically giving lessons all year long, or is there just certain times of the year that you're available?
No, all year long. And I'm going to coach all the way through the year. About the only time I'm not coaching is if I'm at a competition.
Okay.
Yep. Gotcha. And stuff. But I'm mainly here in Georgia and easy to find. And that number I gave out, that's my personal cell. So if you want to talk about it or anything, just call that number and I'll be glad to sign you up.
Well, Wendell, I'll make sure and put all that information right down in the podcast description. So if anybody's listening to this, they can scroll right down there in the description and get all your information and give you a call or email.
Yeah, man.
I cannot tell you how honored Sean and I am to have you on the show. We've been very excited about this. And I knew you're going to be a very busy man down there in September for the AFS National and the Invitation, but maybe I can snag you and we'll do a lunch or something while I'm down there.
Absolutely, as long as you're by.
I'm going to take Sean's credit card with me, so we'll have a heyday. We'll pick out.
You think he's kidding, but he's not. Okay, you think he's kidding, but he ain't.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Wendell. We appreciate it. Sir, any closing thoughts? Or is there anybody you'd like to thank or anything before we get off here?
Well, you know, I just thank all my sponsors and my wife, who's very supportive, and my family and all my friends, with all of those people behind you, you just can't do this by yourself. So just those people, and you know, I've had the same sponsors for years. I've been shooting for Paparazzi forever. It's the only gun sponsorship I've ever had. Remington is the only ammo that I've ever used. I've never changed sponsorships my whole career.
That's awesome.
And so I'm still with the same people that started with me almost 30 years ago. And I'm very proud of that. Without all their help, this would have been a whole lot harder.
Well, I think that says an awful lot about you, Wendell. That's a class act for sure.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, listen, congratulations again on your marriage and congratulations on another world title.
Thank you.
That's awesome. And, thank you. We appreciate you spending some time with us.
It's been an honor and a privilege, Wendell. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right. Have a great evening.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you say anything else but wow?
You know, I will say this. The wait was well worth it.
Oh, yeah.
I know we've really been playing with Wendell to try to get the schedules to jive and line up and finally made it happen. And I think that was fantastic. I mean, that man had so much information. Hopefully all of our listeners got a big kick out of that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Wendell's
Wendell.
Like you said, he's been competing for 30 years and he's got 37 world titles from his students.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else can make that accolade, can they?
Proof is in the pudding.
I mean, seriously, can anybody else claim that you can think of? Any other coach?
Nope. And I know one of his students, you know, Griffin, he's definitely lighting it up, and he's going to be another big name to compete with here in the future.
Yes. I remember when he started shooting, his Paparazzi was taller than he was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
But, you can see Wendell so clear in him when he shoots.
Yes. Yeah, the movements and everything. It just the same thing.
Amazing young shooter. And look what Wendell's done with David and Tom C.
Yep.
So, Joe Finese, Tom, I think Todd Hitz took some lessons with him.
Yeah.
So, there's a big name.
Yeah. So, definitely. I mean, what a privilege to have him on here. And honestly, a big thanks to Wendell again for taking the time out of his very busy schedule to sit down with us and do that podcast. So, wow. I'm still kind of starstruck over the whole thing.
You're not spellstruck, starstruck.
Yeah, I'm tongue-tied too, man. I'm tongue-tied.
Oh, but man.
That went great, man. And again, that was an awesome podcast, I think, in my opinion.
Yes, for sure. And hey, folks, real quick before we let you go, let's not forget about questions for the coaches. Please get those questions sent in. If you want to specify a coach, we have Don Grant, John Woolley, Tracy Wright, Corey Cruz, Brad Kidd Jr., Kevin DeMichael, Chad Roberts, and if God can find him, David Radulovich. So if you do have a question for the coach and you want a specific coach, make sure you name it. Otherwise, just send the questions in. You can go to our website, hit the contact button. That email comes right to Sean and I. And please, please, please show some patronage to our sponsors, Bear Pelt, KLMO, Game Boy US, Atlas Traps. Love me some American-made Atlas Traps, Sean Alley.
Yes, I know.
Odo Pro, Technology Hearing Services, Negrini Cases. Sean, you're liking your new Negrini case.
You know, I've been using that thing more and more and more. I never thought I would use it to the extent that I do, but I almost always pack that thing now to my shoots, even my local ones.
Yes. And Rhino Chokes. We've got some big news coming up about Rhino. Yeah,
don't let the cat out of the bag.
A little teaser. R.E. Ranger, they've got some big news coming out. We're going to have Sarah on here before too long to talk about that. White Flyer Targets. Love me some White Flyer Targets. And Sean, the new pair of shorts I got from Folded Wing Apparel are awesome. It feels like I'm wearing nothing at all, which makes me feel like I ought to go to jail half the time I'm in public. But nonetheless, they are super comfortable, perfect for this hot, sticky weather. You can get a pair of them, Sean.
I'll have to reach out and see if I can snag a pair. So you talk highly of them, so I'm going to give them a shot.
I wouldn't steer you wrong, brother.
Yeah, and we always say it every week, week in and week out. Take somebody new shooting. Take somebody new to a tournament. Take them to a charity event. Just get them out there with a gun in their hand. Let them have fun. Enjoy this sport. Bring somebody new into our game.
Yes, absolutely. And if they hit the bug and they want some instruction, we've had tons and tons and tons of great coaches on the show. Go back through, have them listen to the episodes, pick their favorite one, and go get a hold of them.
Right.
You know, take some instruction from them. In the meantime, you'd do us all a great big favor if you leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. And until next week, Mr. Alley,
we can't wait to see you all back here on the Dead Pair Podcast.